I'm Amy.
And I'm Amber.
Welcome to TLC. It has been a while.
It has, because Amy and I have been working on a super exciting project and are very happy to be back in this studio. I'm just going to say, Amy, that this studio is a lot more forgiving than green screens, teleprompters, and everything else we've been doing the last month.
Yes, I would agree. We can actually wear green in this studio.
True. So. But not today, though, apparently.
You know, neither are, which is not normal. Amber and I were given the opportunity to work with the Vinod Chhatra Impact Lab at Radford University on a really cool project. And one thing about Amber and I is that we don't do anything without a lot of intentionality behind it. Amber and I are both yes people. If you know us, you're probably shaking your head. Or if you know of people like that, you're shaking your head. And so a lot of conversations that Amber and I have had have been around the fact that we're going to start saying no to things that don't have like a really big impact right now, because we just feel like our efforts need to be focused in a certain area. And so when this project was presented to us, and it was presented to us in the fashion of, there are 3,500 teacher vacancies in the state of Virginia, the state that we both teach in. And so that was appalling to us, like eye-opening. Yeah. Wow. Mm. And even to find out since then that that number is now 3,800 teacher vacancies, it has definitely led to Amber and I having a lot of conversations and hard conversations about what we thought about this. And it led to us posting on our TLC Facebook page about it. And we got a question from a former coworker asking why. Why this was. Why do we have 3,800 teacher vacancies? And that was a lot for us to process, to be honest. I mean, we've sat on the deck and talked about it and talked about why and talked about, could we fix it? Could it be fixed? I mean, all the things. And we've honestly struggled with this because we do like to keep things light and we do like to keep things on the joyful side, especially in this podcast. But we both know we wouldn't be doing any justice to this whole issue if we don't address what is going on and we don't talk about these issues. And so teachers, we see you, we understand, we feel you. And we know that the idea of this is we've got to figure out why we can't keep teachers in the classroom.
So Amy and I have looked at all the reasons for why, and there are a lot we are not going to touch on today, a lot, but there are three really big elephants in the room that we need to talk about, because I think teachers just need to hear that we're all on the same page, and how we can get that joy back again. So the first one is COVID. I just vividly remember reading articles about amazing teachers and how they stepped up. And here's a teacher teaching through like a glass door to like a second grader, so that second grader can, you know, learn science. And I know I did a ton during COVID to prioritize my students. And I know you did a ton, Amy, so that we could have our students function and live during that time. Of course, I put my own children on the back burner, but we just really went from being heroes, aside from nurses and doctors, yeah, to being the enemy. I don't know what happened. I don't know what changed. I just know that within a year, all of a sudden we were the enemy.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Everything. And it was a huge struggle for so many of us dealing with our own health issues, or
everything we knew about teaching was completely different.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah. The table was like flipped out from under us and here, do all this.
Right. But it was like we were expected to be okay. And, you know, I think a lot of people lost sight of the fact that We were worried about getting COVID. We were worried about our students getting COVID, or and we did a dang good job working through it.
We did. And it was this way to sort of like, oh, look, I'm learning a new skill. I'm going to spread. I'm going to just be positive and shine light on, look at this new thing I'm doing in Google Classroom. But in the end, when we go back to that, that was so much work and stress. And I think it was probably incredibly traumatic for millions of teachers, students, parents, but no one's really addressing that. Somehow we just walked out as the enemy. I don't know how to regain that. I would say in the nation, in this world, everyone lost control during COVID. I'm not 100% sure how to get back there, but so much of that was just out of our control. We really couldn't get anywhere after that. And I think everyone's just treading water because, well, students lost their coping skills. And it led to a lot of students being forced into the classroom and not wanting to be there. I mean, we could spend probably 45 minutes on COVID. But that's not the only one.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, the social, emotional, you know, the academic, all of it, it is going to take years and years and years to recover from. And I think that people thought since teachers were the professionals, that automatically they would be fine. And nurses and doctors were the professionals, automatically they would be fine. It's hard. And we're not fine.
No, and, you know, Amy and I would say we're like kind of computer savvy, but I vividly remember when they put us all virtual, thinking of like 10 teachers in the building that still were using transparencies and copies from, like, you know, where down at the bottom it says like copyright 2015. Yes. Like, I remember a student showing me a worksheet that was like copyright 1985. And I was like, wow, that teacher's still using that. Okay. So when we shut down, I was like, oh, sorry.
This is going to be bad. Yeah.
It's going to be so bad. And I know, you know, everyone's just at different levels with technology, and you couldn't even like hold a workshop to help people through that. We didn't get any training. It was like, you're doing it.
Well, I also think of you who had elementary school kids who didn't spend all day on computers and then all of a sudden had to, or were given a envelope packed full of worksheets. And I mean, I just think that a lot of the humanization of teaching was lost in COVID, and we are no longer people to, you know, outsiders, and we are just supposed to be doing a job.
Yes. And maybe that takes us to our second elephant in the room, which is parents. I think it was trending this way about 10 years ago with the implementation of a certain just incredible
power school
computer program that allows parents to watch in real time what their students are doing, what their grades are, the moment the grades get put in. And it started this constant monitoring and like comparison, competitive. I think that was already there. I know that was already there between parents and other parents and students and other students, but it has just created a terrible dynamic in the classroom. And I don't know if it's because parents are able to see grades and question their student and constantly expect perfection. I cannot put my finger on it, but parents have definitely changed. And I think COVID added a little bit to it, because now they're not using their powers to support us as teachers. They focus on the negative, and they have some sort of belief that education should be like a vacation, where at the end, their student should get a 100A because their student is perfect. And, and they've lost sight of the learning process and how it's difficult to learn something new. And students they're challenged. We challenge them. That's kind of like our job.
That's our job.
That's like our job.
And I will say to those parents that are out there who are supporting us and supporting your students, keep doing it.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you are the minority.
Yeah. So if you haven't thanked a teacher lately and you're thinking of a teacher right now, that teacher actually does have a huge impact because they see my student for 8 hours in a day. And I only see my kid like 2.5 at best. This is probably the best time to maybe mentally start flipping that switch. It's really tough because we can't, as teachers, convince everyone that we're doing what's in the best interest of the student, even though we are. People don't see that. It's just an incredibly difficult job to be able to communicate that.
I go back to, Amber, when you and I were kids and in school, and if I got a bad grade or you got a bad grade and you came home and told your parents, they were like, well, what'd you do wrong?
Yeah.
Why didn't you study? It was never, well, why didn't the teacher give you a better grade? Or, you know, what did the teacher do to cause this? It was, the responsibility was ours. And that shift has been so drastic.
Yes.
You know, we've seen it over our 20 plus years, both in the classroom, but like, when did the students stop being responsible for their education? And when did the blame all begin to lie with the teachers?
Yes.
I don't know.
This is why it's an elephant, Amy.
This is true. But, you know, going back, I guess this can kind of segue into the next one as well, is that looking back when we started teaching and 2003 and 2004, what did leadership look like then?
I had a mentor who was incredibly amazing, Anthony Swearingen, still to this day. I owe my career to him because he saw potential and was just, yeah, I guess he was working for the district, but it just wasn't how he approached helping me. Like, he just came and was like, hey, I have this really great idea. Maybe you should try that next time because I saw you really struggled with those students. And I was like, okay, you know, like, it was just different. I felt really supported in my first 10 years. And
yeah, and I would say the same. I mean, mine is Martha Ann Stallings, and she was phenomenal and always was there if you had a question, or she was a soundboard. Like, she was just right there. But, you know, leadership is our next elephant. Leadership right has totally changed. And I can really pinpoint over the last 10 years that it's really changed. And I think for me, it has made a shift from supporting teachers to almost supporting parents and
yes,
making sure that they think the school looks good versus let me support my teachers who can then support their students who can then do their jobs and be successful. And
well, and Amy and I have worked for some amazing administrators and still do to this day. The sad part is now a lot of districts, when you have an administrator who has everything working for them, they're supporting teachers, the school is coming around, the students are excited to be there, then most districts take that administrator and plop them somewhere else, causing upheaval in the last building and an adjustment and a shift. And this happens mid-year, literally all the time. I don't know why that is the best plan of action, because I'm pretty sure no other business or anything in the entire world operates that way. Why we think that's a good idea? Great job, administrators.
Here you go.
It's just hard for me.
Like, yeah.
Why? No one knows.
No. And I feel like the whole idea of leadership has become so focused on what we look like versus what the actual goal of this job is, which is to see students succeed. And at some point, students became numbers. It's data. It's, you know, this percentage, that percentage. It's not a student anymore. It's a number. Right. And we have completely lost all autonomy as teachers because we have to focus solely on that data and can't take the time to focus on our classroom, our community, and the things that do create success in students.
So we've been over the large elephants that are just reality right now for teachers all over the nation, and definitely part of the reason for the 3,500 vacancies, which led us to many hours sitting on the deck thinking about how can we fix this? Like, how can we fix this? There is just so much that's been lost. So it's as if we need to take control. Maybe, I don't know, but it led me to asking Amy the big question of, if you could control your own school, you had all the money in the world, you had all the resources, you had all the support, what would you do in your classroom? How would you make your school?
So my first response was fun. And as I started talking to Amber, I explained that, you know, if I was building my dream school and I had no limitations, there would be a playground in the middle. I wouldn't have an office. My desk would be in the middle. Like, it would be fun. I would be accessible. It would just be centered around why we want kids to want to come to school. And when school is fun, they want to come to school. And I'm not saying you have to get up and put like a dog and pony show on every day, but like when they feel welcomed and when they feel like there is a place that is a great outlet for them, they want to be there. And that's been lost. And I often think back to reading about the Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta and just the fact that they needed to de-escalate a student. They would take them, they would slide down the slide and have a conversation, and just the difference that it made for those kids to know that that school was built around the idea that education was fun. And Amber, I know you as well have always wanted a classroom that was fun. I've always told my students, I know that you are not going to love history or government. I taught government most years, and I've told them, like, I don't expect you to want to love government or history, but I want you to love coming to government or history class. And just putting the fun back into it, welcome, have a handshake, have, you know, like anything like that, that creates that positive environment that students want to be a part of is going to help.
Oh yeah. Cause I definitely had, I used to do like handshakes with my students coming into the classroom and high-fiving, and like, no one told me I had to do that. You know, and I think a lot of times, especially right now, teachers are so bogged down with all the responsibility and all the work that the little nuances of fun that we used to do, just, it's just been lost. So I want to have fun, but recently in the last 4 years, maybe 5 years, and it's a COVID thing, I've decided that I need something to look forward to. If it's a vacation, and my husband hates me because we will be on the way back from vacation and I will be planning the next vacation. He gets so mad. And I'm just like, no, I need something to look forward to. And that's how I approach the classroom as well, because I can even convince my students, like, hey, I know we are in the trenches right now. We are doing so much dimensional analysis and stoichiometry. But at the end of this week, we're going to be roasting marshmallows and doing our s'mores lab. And we can do, you know, a class competition about how everyone roasts their marshmallows differently. And I will tell you that people are incredibly judgy about how marshmallows are roasted.
Yes.
I had no idea.
A hot topic in my family. This is intense. This causes fights in my family.
Yes. Oh, we'll put 30 teenagers in a room with Bunsen burners, and the Bunsen burners burn the marshmallows so hot. Like, they just burn so much hotter than a campfire that always there's a student who lights the whole thing on fire, because that's like how they like to roast it. And then they go to blow out the marshmallow and the stick has burned like through, and the flaming marshmallow across the room. Every time. There's always one, even though I warn them. And sometimes I feel like, she warned us, like, let's do this. Flaming marshmallow incoming. But really, that is how I sort of convince myself and convince my students to push through, is to know that there is fun somewhere in the plan. If I know it's there, then I can motivate myself. And then I know I can motivate my students. And I think that fun can be like just unhinged. We can be unhinged. We need to just put a little like bug in your ear. We started this with our episode of 3,500 teacher vacancies in the state of Virginia. You're not going to lose your job. So if that means you're going to go have some fun, or you're going to take kids on a walk one day because you need to get out of the classroom, or you're going to go to the cafeteria and everybody gets a snack, it doesn't matter. You're not going to get fired. It's just not going to happen. They need you in the classroom. Your students need you. And more importantly, your students need you to enjoy being there. And we can do that. We can be unhinged. It's actually kind of cool. My last year, when I knew I was leaving my high school in North Carolina, it was pretty fun because I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing any of this. I'm just showing up. I'm teaching. And I asked my students, I was like, guess what? It's my last year. What are we going to do? And they came up with, because I was teaching AP chemistry at the time, they came up with AP intramural competitions after the AP exam. So that was sort of the same thing. I was like, we will do this. We will suffer in this course. But as of May 9th, at the end of your exam, on May 10th, it's on, like, AP competition. So we competed against like the calculus class and the, you know, and the physics class. And it was so, so enjoyable. Everybody played Ultimate Frisbee. Everybody was out there playing cornhole. Like, it was just something to look forward to. And definitely my fondest memories of just spending time with my students and enjoying them.
My last year at Blacksburg High School, I kind of did the same thing. Like, I knew going in that that was my last year, and it was my son's senior year, and I was teaching him and all of his friends that I'd seen grow up together. And we had some serious fun. You can incorporate learning and fun. They learned. They made some great rap videos about the Declaration of Independence. You know, they made some great commercials about the Constitution. And we laughed a lot. We had a lot of fun times, but I threw all the rules out the window. I'll be 100% honest. The last thing I cared about was a standard. The last thing I cared about was a test, and I took time to be present with my students and enjoy what I knew was my last. If I could teach like that every year, I think I would see so much more success in my students and in my happiness.
Yes, it was probably March of that year, I essentially said, like, I am so sick of grading. Like, I'm done. I don't want to give you another test. I already know that you know this. Like, I'm over it. And they were so shocked. They're like, what? Don't we need more grades? It's like, do you need more grades? I don't think you do. I actually know that you know this. I can see this. So it was sort of just taking control of all the things that I didn't realize I was sick of and allowing myself to let go. And that's something that we just don't do. As teachers in the classroom, we just don't. We feel so obligated. Like, I have to grade this. I have to finish this email. I must respond. You don't, because they're not going to fire you.
No, and they're not.
They're not.
And the other part of that too is like really pushing for your capacity to be in the classroom wholly. Like,
yes,
you are there physically, you are there emotionally, you are there mentally. I mean, Amber, if we step back, how long has it been since we've fully been in the classroom? I mean, years, yes. Because there's so many other things, but this is our opportunity to say, we are taking our classroom back. I am going to be there. I'm going to have a work-life balance. I'm going to do what I know my students need me to do. I am going to do what I know I need me to do. And we're taking charge. Like, it is time for teachers to get back to the art of teaching. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we really hope you'll tune in to our next episode as we head into teacher appreciation time.
Amy and I have compiled some of our favorite teacher stories that will hopefully have everyone appreciating teachers a little bit more.